Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, text number 31, we're just going to read. Brahmanyakshila Sampana Satya Sando Ditendriya Atmavat Sarabhutanam Eka Priya Suritama Brahmanya, cultured as a good Brahmana. Shila Sampana, possessing all good qualities. Satya Sandhya, determined to understand the absolute truth. Jita Indriya, fully controlling the senses and mind. Atmavat, like the super soul. Sarabhutanam, of all living entities. Ekapriya, the one beloved. Surittama, the best friend. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakashipu, described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmin, having good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and elder godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. Purport. These are some of the qualifications of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is automatically a Brahmana because a Vaishnava has all the good qualities of a Brahmana. Samadama tapaso cham shantir arjavam evacha jnana vijnanam astikyam brahma karma sabhavajam. Peacefulness, full control, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. These qualities are manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, a perfect Vaishnava is also a perfect Brahmana, as indicated here by the words Brahmanyak Shila Sampana. A Vaishnava is always determined to understand the absolute truth, and to understand the absolute truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. Prahlad Maharaj possessed all these qualities. A Vaishnava is always a well-wisher to everyone. The Goswamis, for example, are described in this way. Dira Dira Jana Priya Priyo. They were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians. A Vaishnava must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. Atmavat. A Vaishnava should be like Paramatma. Ishvara Sarabhutanam Ride Sharajana Tishtate. Paramatma does not hate anyone. Indeed, he is in the heart of a Brahmin, but he is also in the heart of a pig. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the home of a chandala, a Vaishnava never refuses to act for everyone's benefit, welfare. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always obedient to the spiritual master, Arya. The word Arya refers to one who has advanced in knowledge. One who is deficient in knowledge cannot be called Arya. At the present, however, the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. This is the unfortunate situation of Kali Yuga. The word guru refers to the spiritual master who initiates his disciple into advancement into the science of Krishna or Krishna consciousness, as stated by Srila Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, Sri Bhagavan Mantra Padekshake Guru Gura Vidya Tartyartaha. Qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakashipu, described herein. He was completely cultured as a qualified brahmana, having good character, and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind, like the super soul. He was kind to every living entity, and he was the best friend of everyone. To the respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual masters, and elder brothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. Prahlad Maharaj developed all the good qualities of a Vaishnava. And we're also supposed to develop the same qualities. We should know why we're here. Sometimes people don't know why they're here in the temple, why they're trying to learn the science of Krishna consciousness. And if they don't know what they're trying to achieve, then they're going to achieve what they're supposed to achieve. There's a difference between what we're thinking we want to achieve and what we're supposed to achieve. In other words, we may be here thinking, basically, as we know, Krishna says, Shatura Vida Bhajante Mam, Janasukritina Arjuna, Ardigdignasi Aratarati, Gyani Chabha Aratarshibo. There are four kinds of pious people, they approach Krishna. So that's very nice. Krishna doesn't condemn them as being rascals. You rascal, you're full of material desires, and you're approaching me. The hell will you go to? You'll burn forever. No, Krishna says, Tesham Gyani Nityukta, that out of them, Gyani is the best. Tesham Gyani Nityukta Eka Bhaktir Vishishite Priyohi Gyani Noyarta Mahamsacha Mama Priyaha. But he says, Udarad Sava Evaite Gyani Tva Mamemitam Asitasu Yuktama Mam Eva Nutamam Gatim. He also says that all these other persons are also magnanimous souls who have approached me. They've approached the right person, but they just don't know what the right goal is, that's all. They're taking something insignificant. It's like you approach a multi-billionaire and you ask him for a cup of coffee. If you approach someone who's super wealthy, you should ask him appropriately. Ask him for $100 million, and if he says, well, I can give you half, I guess you can settle for it. If you ask him for a cup of coffee, he probably won't even bother. He'll tell his servant, go get him a cup of coffee and get out of here. So we should know what the right goal is. And although we are full of other desires, because that's what a conditioned soul is, there's no Mahabhagavat conditioned soul. They don't go together. So if we're not Mahabhagavats, we must be conditioned souls. And if we're conditioned souls, we must be full of material desires. But we should know what the right person to approach. Like Dhruva Maharaj approached Lord Krishna, Vishnu, to fulfill his desire. And at the end, he not only got his desire fulfilled, but he became a Mahabhagavat, a pure devotee, in the process of fulfilling his desire. So similarly, Prahlad Maharaj is at the end of the process. Of course, the process is eternal, so it goes on forever. There's always more and more improvement. But he's surpassed spontaneous devotion. He's a Radhatmika Bhakta. He's in the spiritual world already. And therefore, he's manifesting more and more of the good qualities of Krishna. Now we are at the stage, we want to find out what is the process to get whatever we want. Because there is one process to get whatever anyone wants. There's no many processes. There's always the same process. Therefore, in the our scriptures, Prabhupada said, our scriptures are the most consistent, exacting, and voluminous due to the unbreakable system of disciple succession. So, voluminous, consistent, exacting. There are principles that if you follow the principles, you get what you want. What? Not exactly what we want. Everyone wants bliss, knowledge, and eternity. And Maya is promising it in different aspects. Maya is never promising, please do this, and I'll put you in absolute misery forever. Sure, Maya. Wow, I always want to be in absolute misery. You know, do you think forever is long enough? I really can you extend it? I mean, burn in hell forever is all right, but is there some better place in hell I can burn forever? Is that the absolute place? No, there's one process, and as I've said the process before, I didn't make it up. It's the same process in Bhagavad Gita. If you want to learn something, anything, whatever it is, if you want to learn how to play table tennis, if you ever watched a table tennis match, you know, obviously they're not even playing. The super soul must be playing. They must have completely surrendered to the super soul to learn this, because there's no way they know what's going on. So if we want to learn something like that, there's a process of doing it. You learn from someone who knows how to do it, first of all. Someone who knows how to do it better than you do. You can't generally learn. If you start out to learn something, you don't learn from someone who knows worse than you are. You don't go anywhere. Even I used to play chess for some years. I was a captain of my chess team in school. I was always captain of something, so. I played at the Manhattan Chess Club, at least one tournament, interstate tournament for chess. So when I started to play, I played with my father when I was 5 or 3 years older, I can't remember. And I think the first game or two, he beat me because he was better than me. And that was the end of it. That was the last time he ever beat me. He ever won the chess match, as far as I remember. Because he knew how to move the pieces, but he didn't know how to play the game. Later on, of course, there weren't so many experts available at that time. So I had to learn from books. Then I used to play the chess club when I was in public school, and there was always someone who was overseeing it, and he never won a game for me. So he was completely frustrated. You know, I may have been 9 years old or 7 years old, whatever it was, and here he was probably in his 30s or something, and he couldn't even beat a game. So he went, and he literally probably studied day and night, because he just couldn't take it, that this little boy, 7 years old, is beating him every single time. And then finally he won a game for me. And it was like you could see the relief on his face. He was just like And then I got inspired. So you have to... There has to be some inspiration. If you win every time, it means you're playing against people who don't know anything. Unless you're really super expert, you're learning from people who don't know anything. Everyone knows something. But you generally learn from people who are better than you are. So you get the theoretical knowledge. But then you have to understand the principles. So understanding the principles is the perspective. How, why, what makes this work? What are the priorities? What are the priorities and what are the details that go into that? So that's called perspective. And then when you understand the overall viewpoint, what you're trying to achieve, and how the steps that you achieve it are, and what the details are, what's the possible permutations, the combinations of the situation, how they all fit together, the principles, what the priority, what to properly choose, etc. Then you can develop some skill by practice. See if it actually works, under what situation, and then you can learn what is the overall viewpoint, what are actually the priorities, what are the details that go into the priority, that make up the priority. You can try it out, you can learn from experience what works and what doesn't work. So if you want to become expert at chess, then you have to study like 5 to 8 hours a day for the rest of your life. Because you're not going to, other people are going to be studying 5 to 8 hours a day for the rest of their life. And if you expect to beat them, when they're not only looking at the chessboard, but they're just praying for the super soul to give them intelligence. And they have decades of experience. They've seen probably seen every single combination, you know, that's possible on the chessboard, practically speaking. And they've met every different opponent, and they know every different mentality. So in that way, they more or less, for if one is not super experienced on the same level as they are, they just move the chess, the pieces, where they should be, and they just wait for the first mistake. Then the person's completely finished because he's not on their level. They used to do, like, I remember I was reading about the history of chess players. If you wanted to win in chess play, and it was really a close match, what they do is they would be smoking a cigar, and then they blow the smoke into the person's face just to confuse them. So it looks like a very passive game, but I can assure you when you're playing in a tournament, it's war. They want to kill you. And if they could blow smoke in your face, they do that. They could take sand and throw it in your eyes. They do that too. So you have to be super expert. That's called skill. Then when you actually practice, and you have to have some conviction. And conviction can only come about when you have some kind of memory. If you can't remember what you did in the past, you can't have any conviction whatsoever. Because there's nothing to have conviction about. So the only way to actually have conviction and determination is to actually follow the regular principles. Without following the regular principles, one's intelligence, one's memory goes out the window, and there's no question of having any conviction because you can't remember what you're convinced about. Even if you forget everything else, at least you know what the goal is, what you're convinced about. As Brajavihari Prabhu told me, he went to see the elderly Puri Maharaj when he was over 100 years old. And he said, "Puri Maharaj, it's me, Brajavihari." And Puri Maharaj said, "Sorry, I can't remember anyone. I forgot everything. The only thing I can remember is Krishna. The only thing I've left is faith in Krishna." So if you're going to forget everything, don't forget Krishna. Then you're on the right track. Even if you say, I can't remember anything, but all I can do is remember Krishna, then you're sure to go back to Godhead. That's perfection. So skill from learning, hearing from the right people, from the right source, what to do. And this would be the case, Prahlad Maharaj learned how to control he heard about controlling the mind and senses. So that's not only what to do, but what's the right thing to do? In other words, you can do things very efficiently. You can learn so many things to do efficiently, but you have to find out what effective is. If we want to become effectively happy and peaceful and satisfied and enlightened, you have to find out what actually will work, what actually to do. And of course, why to do it, why to actually want to become happy and peaceful, etc., etc. It's not that everyone wants to become happy and peaceful, but they don't know, they're not really conscious of what they're trying to achieve. One time, the first class I heard Prabhupada give personally, directly, was in Buffalo in 1969 when he came to visit. And the first question he asked the devotees, he said, "Do you want to become happy?" And none of the devotees knew the answer. So Prabhupada looked at them like he was looking at, there were only like five of us in the class. It was a Mahabig temple with five devotees. And he was looking at us like, you know, trying to figure out what species we came from. And he had to ask again. He said, "Don't you want to become happy?" And everyone was looking at each other, you know, no one had asked such a profound question before. We thought maybe it was a trick question. So then Prabhupada looked even more concerned. And then he asked for a third time. I guess in American baseball, and as also in the Vedic culture, three strikes and you're out. So he asked, "Don't you want to become happy?" And one devotee guessed the answer. And said, "Yes, Prabhupada, 50% chance." And Prabhupada looked very relieved and he said, "Oh, thank you." So people don't even know they're trying to become happy. So they'll do things that makes them completely miserable, thinking that somehow or another they'll get the goal that way. Of course, we say that sometimes that which in the beginning may be bitter like poison, at the end is like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So there are activities that may be bitter at the beginning, but at the end become like poison. I mean, that are bitter at the beginning, and at the end are like nectar. There are things that are bitter at the beginning and bitter at the end too, like poison. That's in the mode of ignorance. But the mode of goodness, so what's the difference? If everyone wants to become happy, because people don't know what happiness is. People will put themselves into misery, go through 20 years of school, college, put themselves in debt so they'll never be able to pay it in three lifetimes. All to get a degree so that they can feel themselves superior to everyone. And they consider that happiness. But they don't know what happiness is. They want something which they think is happiness, but actually they're aiming for something which is not real happiness. Because they don't know. Andaya tandira upagiyamanaste pishatantra urudami bara. They don't know what happiness is, and therefore they're striving for something that will actually make them miserable. So one should know what to do to actually become happy and why one is doing it. Otherwise, it's nimagraha, blindly following and not checking to see what actually the purpose is. Just blindly following what is trying to be achieved. So one should know what one is trying to achieve. And here, for instance, there's something which is inconceivable in modern society. Something that people say was ridiculous, it's just sentimentalism, like being kind to people. Only some really sentimental people who haven't had any real education, they actually believe in being kind to people. Or being equal to everyone, a menial servant, people hear this, a menial servant to respectable persons. A menial servant. Oh, he's lost his sense of self-worth. He's groveling in the ground like a menial servant. I think they call it self-worth. Is that, what is it?
Self-esteem.
Self-esteem. He's, by a bad association, he's actually become humble. My God, the last thing. He's lost his self-esteem. He doesn't even know all the great qualities. He can't even take advantage of them to get ahead in life anymore. So everything mentioned here, to the poor, he was like a father. My God, what kind of children did he have? Useless children, poor children. Who was his teacher? Is my God. Didn't know what the, you know, as I said many times, There in the Bible, they have what's called the golden rule. Of course, I guess people don't read the Bible anymore, so they don't know what the golden rule is. You've heard of the golden rule before? Have you heard of the golden rule? Yeah. Something like, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. That's called the golden rule. To learn to love thy God, Lord thy heart. God, to learn to love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy might, with all thy soul, and to learn to love thy neighbor as thyself. That's considered the golden rule. But that's been replaced completely. It doesn't exist anymore. As we all know, the present golden rule is that he who has gold, he rules. That's the golden rule. And every other golden rule has just been thrown out. It's simply sentimentalism. Weak-hearted, you know, people who couldn't get ahead in life, they take shelter of sentimental religion. And at least the people who actually take shelter of religion nowadays, who really get ahead in religion, they're the wealthiest. They get the money. And they live like emperors. So that's really good religion. That's the old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Where you put the box out, and people come and pray to the deities, and they give a little donation into the box and pray, my dear Lord, I gave €5, you know, please make it 500,000. I gave you a donation, and, you know, you say, yei tamam prapadente, that you reciprocate, so I'll wait for my birthday and see what I get. So one should know what the goal is and why one should achieve it, and then one should try to develop the skill and see if it works or not. And if it works, then one will develop conviction. And one, that conviction will inspire one to go on to hear more, what to do, why to do it, and to practice it. If there's no result, then one will give it up after some time. If we chant Hare Krishna, out of sentiment that I'm supposed to chant Hare Krishna, that maybe it works at the beginning. We don't know why it works. We never really developed that much skill, but it works, so we follow it. And maybe sometimes Krishna gives us some extra special mercy. But the nature of the material energy is that we forget. It becomes like a dream in the course of time. You know, some forgotten dream we had last night. So, unless we actually constantly try to understand what to do from the right source and see models of people who actually have more skill, who know what to do better than we do, who have a better perspective than we do, who are more expert at trying to achieve what's said, unless we have their association, we won't develop the conviction to sustain our progress from one level to the next, because it is a level, one level to the next. We may become expert at what to do and do it mechanically for the rest of our lives. We may even get a perfect perspective. We can tell everyone exactly what to do, and they'll all be convinced to do it, except for ourselves. And we may even develop the skill doing it. We're doing it more expertly than everyone. We can tell everyone what to do, and we're completely skillful. We know how to win friends and influence people. So we become expert, and we have the conviction that I should do, I'm getting everything I want. This is called Taranga Rangini in our literature. You become better than everyone in what to do. You become, have a better perspective on everyone, why to do it. You become more skillful in doing it. And you're completely convinced, and you can tell everyone with conviction they should also do it, but you never develop the character of a pure devotee. You never develop, as what says here at the end, that Prahlad Maharaj, he was free from unnatural pride. He never thought himself the doer. He thought himself to be simply the servant of Krishna's servants. So therefore, when he developed that attitude of menial servant, or as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, the secret of advancement in spiritual satisfaction of the self-realized soul is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. One should accept the spiritual master as a menial servant and serve him without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. So without that, it is said in the Nectar, Ishupanishad, it becomes like a jewel on the head of a serpent. One becomes like Ramaharshan. Learned, convincing, expert in so many different ways, but didn't have developed the character of a pure devotee, didn't develop the humility, and therefore he even offended the Supreme Personality of Godhead, being so proud of all the other qualities he had, not realizing there were gifts from Krishna. So when Krishna came, he didn't realize that this is the person who's given him all those gifts, all the benedictions, and therefore he disrespected him. And as soon as that happens, it doesn't matter who one is finished. Indra, he's sitting on the throne, Brihaspati comes in, and he neglects Brihaspati, his spiritual master. Brihaspati says, all right, I'm not needed here, no problem. And he leaves. And then Indra said, oh my God, I just made a mistake. Oh my Krishna. And he searches everywhere for Brihaspati, and Brihaspati doesn't appear. Brihaspati knows what's going to happen. And the demons come, because they respected Sukracharya. And the demigods all became weak because they disrespected, the head demigod disrespected his spiritual master, and they got conquered by the demons. They were so proud and puffed up. Where are the demigods? We have Vishnu on our side. But Vishnu wasn't on their side when they disrespected their spiritual master. He was more favorable to the demons, at least for that time, in terms of what Indra was so proud of. His material wealth and position. So Krishna utilized the demons to take away his wealth and his position so he could hide in a lotus flower for some time. So Krishna will even leave to teach his devotees lessons. He'll use the demons. And to teach the demons lessons, he uses the devotees. But our lesson is not to learn from the demons how to become a demon. Our purpose is to help the demons become devotees. And we shouldn't put ourselves in a position where the demons have to inspire us to become devotees. That would not be very valuable. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
The same Prahlad Maharaj says in a couple chapters that Krishna will not be pleased by the 12 brahminical qualities, but here he's glorified as somebody who has all the brahminical qualities. Would you like to say something about this distinction?
Well, he not only has the 12 brahminical qualities, he also has humility. In other words, he's not only samadhamma tapaso, he's not only in the mode of goodness, but he's a pure devotee. As the analogy goes, if you want to go fly, of course no one can fly nowadays to very many places, but if you could fly from here, say to Brussels, Wizz Airlines, it's the cheapest by the way, in case you have to fly sometime, then the best thing to do is to go to the airport. And then it's easier to get aboard an airplane to go to Brussels, if that's your destination. Similarly, now, if you go on your roof of the temple here and hope an airplane eventually passes by and you can get a ride from the roof, you may have to wait a long time, like forever. Long time. So the easiest thing to do is to go to the airport and get on the plane. Similarly, if you want to go to transcendence, to go to Krishna consciousness, be on the transcendental platform, the way to do it is to first come to the mode of goodness. And from there you can transcend to pure goodness. But unless you're on the platform of goodness, it's not possible to transcend into pure goodness. Therefore the brahminical qualities are necessary, but they're not sufficient. Anything else? Yes. Go ahead.
And among these eight qualities mentioned in the, or nine qualities mentioned here in the verse from the Gita, which a devotee is supposed to concentrate first Shambhu Dhammasta Parshava Chan, or which if a devotee would feel overextended to work upon all of them, where should one focus? Besides, of course, being a devotee and chanting and following the process, but in terms of practicing these qualities.
Well, I guess Krishna knew what he was doing. He's been doing this since time immemorial. So he says, sama, equanimity, control of the mind. If you can't control the mind, there's nothing else you can do. You're finished. So the first one is sama. Or as we say, the 11th is fence. Not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. It's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So attentive chanting is the first thing. Okay, another question?
Hare Krishna, thank you, Maharaj. My question is, if first you get brahminical initiation and then you develop brahminical qualities, or you must already have brahminical qualities and then you get the initiation?
Well, you have to have the seed of, hopefully, I don't know. Our standard is you have to have the seed of brahminical qualities. If you don't chant 16 rounds a day and follow the regular principle, four regular principles for a period of time, then there is no question giving someone second initiation. It should be after some trial of actually chanting 16 rounds and following regular principles. And then there are other qualities that are generally included also, like you should know who Krishna is. You should know what is, generally it's Bhakti Shastri. Bhagavad Gita is the convinces that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that we're his servants. So that should be clear in one's activities. One has actually given up the false ego, which is supposed to be given up at the time of initiation, sufficiently that one will be determined to engage oneself in worshiping the deity. Now there's at least two types of deities we worship. One is the deity in the temple. The other is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the deity for this age in terms of preaching. So one should be dedicated to those deities, the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the deity in the temple, which is also part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. That one is sufficiently given up, or is on the path of giving up one's false ego, that one is actually considering oneself to be Brahman, eternal servant of Krishna. Now one is still in the false ego concept of life, that I am this body, I'm just taking second initiation, because I need some false prestige, because everyone else has a sacred thread or they chant the mantra, and I should also do it so people know who I really am. Well, that's not a very good qualification. But the goal should be to help us come to the platform of always think about, remember Krishna and never forget him. And that's only possible when we're actually deeply thinking about Krishna and experiencing the ecstasy and love which comes from intense meditation on Krishna. Because Krishna is love and devotion and all the good qualities. And if our minds are fixed on him, then we'll develop those same qualities too. We'll wake up. Because those qualities are dormant within us. They just have to be manifested by becoming conscious of him. And his devotees, of course. Thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.